in special instances, grant an employer the right to pay less than the minimum wage. Three conditions are those persons were mentally handicapped, physically handicapped, or over 65 years of age. In reviewing our own statutes, we find that being over 65 years of age is a protected class, and this law is discriminatory. So we are suggesting that the 65-year provision be deleted, still allowing the Wage and Hour Commission to grant sub-minimum wage provisions for mentally and physically handicapped people. And that's the deletion on line 9.
Okay.
Paul, why don't you go through this? We have some errors in this thing, I think, doing the bottom.
Yes. On line 15, that was Legislative Council, I believe, did some cleaning up in the old statute. We didn't put that in, but it appeared in the bill. So we assume that Legislative Council did that, put in the semicolon, the and deleted the period. Line 26, the bracket should not have started where it does if the commissioner does not prevail. That was an error on our part. The brackets really should start on the next page after the words disbursements on line 1, leading the rest of that line, and the word, the two words attorney's fees on line 2. So that particular line would read, if the commissioner does not prevail in such action, he shall pay costs and disbursements from the Bureau of Labor and Industries account. The intent here was to delete the attorney's fees.
Okay.
The reason for that is that they act as that particular situation acts as a deterrent to enforcement. The idea behind an attorney's fees, and also it is to bring it into consistency with our other statutes. Nowhere else in any other legislation that we are responsible for enforcing are we required to pay attorney's fees if we do. For example, on page 1, the first and second line there, the Commissioner of Bureau of Labor and Industries has the same powers and duties in connection with a wage claim, and it cites the wage collection statute there. Based on the minimum wage law, and then as he does under the wage collection statute. The only reference to attorney's fees in the wage collection statute we know of is for the private right, and then it's only to the plaintiff and not to the employer. So there are... We don't feel that the attorney's fees should be assessed if we lose in this case. We can't take the case to court.
let me ask you so I understand the existing law, that if the commissioner of the Bureau of Labor files an action, which I see in the paper all the time, Commissioner of Labor against such and such for the recovery of wages, under the existing law, if that is litigated and you lose, commissioner loses, the other side, the employer, is entitled to attorney fees, cost, and disbursements.
only if we file a case under this section, which allows the commissioner to file an action for the collection of minimum wages and overtime without getting a wage claim first. The reason for not getting a wage claim first, of course, is so many times that when you find minimum wage overtime violations, you cannot find employees that will file a wage claim. But you need to have the ability to bring someone into compliance.
Okay. The normal procedure is that an employee files a wage claim.
That's correct.
If an employee files the wage claim and you try to pursue the employer and the employer doesn't pay, you then, under the law, bring an action for the payment of minimum wage or overtime. In those cases, if you lose, you're liable, the commissioner's liable, for attorney fees, cost, and disbursements.
No, only if we do it, as far as I understand it. Only if we...
You're not liable if there's a wage claim.
That's correct. We're not liable.
You get a call. An anonymous call from somebody that says this person is not paying minimum wage. There's no wage claim filed. But you investigate it and find out that they're not paying minimum wage or overtime. You then bring the action for the payment. If you lose in that case because there's been no prior wage claim filed, you have to pay the attorney fees, cost, and disbursement.
That's correct.
This just says under that situation, you don't have to pay the attorney fees, you'll pay the cost and disbursement.
Right. That's correct.
As a public policy, it appears that what it was attempting to do was to somehow bridle the investigative nature of the Bureau of Labor so that they would not go out and seek claims like this without first having a complaint, although the legislature didn't want to completely deprive you of that authority. But they put a limitation on it by making you liable for attorney fees.
I recall Representative Rogers on the House Labor Committee at the time, it was in 77, indicated that the reason for this is he didn't want to see us going out drumming up business or something like that.
That's what it was. I got it. Okay. Line 17 is the next one.
Line 17, this has to do with the student learner certificate that was, that allows the, well, it's a, where do you start on this one? The last legislative session provided for the ability of an employer to pay a subminimum wage to a person who is defined as a student learner. That is, a person who is a student in a vocational program, so on. Under certain circumstances, the bill gave the State Board of Education authority to set up to issue the certificate, which would allow the employer to pay the subminimum wage. The employer would then have to come before the Wage and Hour Commission to get what rate they would be paying, someplace between 75% and 100%. This particular bill would delete the State Board of Education issuing the certificate and insert the Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries so that we have all of that situation going on, so to speak, in-house.
Have you talked to the State Board of Education about this change?
I have not talked to them about this change.
They may very well not know that you're doing this.
I've had some contact with the State Board when we were attempting to get up the rules to implement this thing. It was my impression that they would not oppose us.
Why don't you do this? Why don't you, after the hearing, contact the State Board of Education, whoever you're dealing with, inform them of Senate Bill 211, specifically line 17, and have them submit a letter to the committee stating whether they support or oppose that particular amendment.
Chairman, I would hope that just your reason for that is just to give them a chance to be heard.
Oh, no, Mr. Chairman, I listen, one of the things that I'm most concerned about is that different agencies start changing the law that other agencies are unknowledgeable about, and then all of a sudden, as the bill gets into some process, somebody gets up and says, I had no idea that you were doing that. I just feel more comfortable if, in fact, the Board of Education, whoever you're dealing with, knows that that's happening and sends us a letter saying I support or oppose it, so we don't have to fight it someplace else down the line. So I hate to get them out on the floor and then everybody starts arguing that the Board of Education wants this. And I think it's their responsibility, Senator, to do that since they're the ones who are originating the change. Is there anyone else that cares to tell any questions on Senate Bill 211? Senator Wingard.
The change you've made regarding the payment of costs and disbursements by the commissioner, do you have a record of having to have made those particular disbursements?
We have a record and accounting system that provide that can give us that information as how costs and disbursements.
Do you know how many you've had to make?
Well, with regard to this particular section, I think we have lost. We lost two cases in this place, and with regard to this particular statute,
and how many would you say out of how many?
Well, we only took two because...
You lost both of them.
Yes, unfortunately. I hate to admit it, but this, we had to pay the attorney's fees, and of course that effectively stopped us from taking any enforcement action in there until we could clarify this issue.
But you only had two cases and you lost both of them.
We only took two cases since the statute's been in effect.
Right.
And we lost both of them. The two that we took up. For the members of the committee, it was, as it was pointed out by Senator Hannon to me, I want you to listen to this, Bruce. The reason on page 2, line 17, why that was put in the Board of Education is, as it was stated, it deals with vocational education. And the people who were charged with vocational education did not want to get caught up in the Wage and Hour Commission's battles over the sub-minimum wage for all minors. And so the how we were going to resolve that is that we were going to put, as it relates to vocational education, in the Department of Education and leave the battle of whether there should be a sub-minimum wage to the Labor Commissioner. And just my concern, knowing administratively that it's easier for you to handle it altogether, the potential abuse of drafting a sub-minimum wage provision and tacking on a vocational education minimum wage together would put us into a position where you people could be doing exactly, you would catch the vocational education people supporting you and then having labor and these other people oppose it, and it would just be a tremendous fight. That's what we were trying to avoid when this bill was passed initially. And it seems like you're putting us right back in that position again. And that's why I want a letter from the Department of Education, Vocational Education Section, that they do not oppose that shift back.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'm amazed that they don't know, that you're unaware of the reason for this in the first place, why that was changed over to the Department of Education. Weren't you aware that?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I was aware of the reason why the Department of Education was in there.
But a minute ago you didn't let us know that you didn't know. I thought you said.
Well, I did not notify the Board of Education that we were attempting to delete them from this bill. But I knew why the Board of Education was in here to start with, the intent. The problem is that my discussions with the Board of Education have been that they don't want this thing because they don't know how to approach giving a certificate, given all of the specifications here in the statute that they have to follow. This is not within their bailiwick.
In other words, you have discussed this with the Board of Education and they are not opposed to this bill in that regard.
I discussed this with Mr. Al Davidson, the State Board. I'm not sure if Mr. Davidson can speak for the State Board. Mr. Davidson had no objection. Kulongowski has asked that we get a letter from not only the State Board, but the Vocational Education Section, which we will do.
We discussed with Mr. Davis. Was he opposed to this bill?
Not at all. Not at all. The problem is one of paperwork and coordination. The other problem of the determination of a subminimum wage didn't come into our conversation at all. That's not to say that Senator Kulongowski's concern isn't a reasonable one, and we will get the letter to find out whether they are supportive or in opposition to the bill.
The fact is, I have employed from the Junction City School District where I live, we employ students to come down and try to work for us as a vocational education work training program. And I think it's good experience. I just don't want that program caught up into this larger battle all the time of subminimum wage, because I think there's a definite benefit to the vocational education program. Is there anyone else to testify on Senate Bill 211? Hearing none, I'll close the hearing on that bill. Senate Bill 212. Mr. Hugo.
Senate Bill 212 permits the commissioner to levy a civil penalty of up to $1,000 for violation of the child labor law. Again, this is at the request of the Chairman of the Wage and Hour Commission. 2 weeks ago, the Wage and Hour Commission, with the full support of the Labor Commissioner, issued a proposed order to an Oregon employer found to have violated Oregon's child labor law, the employer did not seek authorization to hire minors, point one. Point two, a minor was employed without a permit. The minor in the course of his work operating machinery in violation of the hazardous occupation rules. And finally, the minor was killed in an accident operating that equipment. The penalty, such as it was, is that the proposed order says that the employer can no longer hire minors. And that is the extent of the penalty force we have. We're asking permission to put some teeth into the child labor law.
Who makes the determination, Mr. Chairman, as to what the fine will be?
The labor commissioner. There's a hearing process that I understand through the Wage and Hour Commission, and they give a recommendation to the labor commissioner, and the labor commissioner issues an order adopting the finding of the Wage and Hour Commission. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's a proposed order in the first stage. If there's no objection to the proposed order, it automatically becomes final. If there's an objection, then there's a hearing process, and the matter is heard.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
You now have the power to impose civil penalties under...
No, sir, we don't.
None at all?
Not under child labor.
You do for what, though?
Private employment agencies, farm labor contractors are two that we have in the Wage and Hour Division.
There are other penalties in other divisions, civil rights penalties. Civil penalties can be levied up to $1,000.
What was the situation that you talked about in your testimony? What was this, a farm situation? What was that?
No, Senator, it was a commercial airline operating out of McMinnville.
And they were, what was he, flying or was he running ground equipment?
He was operating a forklift at the age of, I think, 16 years, 9 months, something of that nature, under 18. The employer can hire minors, but he has to seek authorization from the Wage and Hour Commission, which is almost a routine matter. They didn't do that. The minor then must get a work permit. He didn't do that. It was a tragic situation in as much as the kid who was killed got the job because his father worked there, and his father was there at the scene of the accident when his son was killed. The whole thing was just a mess. It was just a very bad situation. The only penalties that can be levied now is that the firm, the airline, can no longer hire minors, and that didn't seem to be. The chairman of the Wage and Hour Commission, the newly elected chairman, Mr. Jerry Hagan, commented aloud at the last Wage and Hour Commission that it seems idiotic to have laws that are that lenient as far as penalties are concerned.
What was the situation on the forklift? It was defective or what?
He was operating it, as I understand it, on an incline and fell off and was run over.
Well, actually, the kid was driving it too fast. He came around a corner down a slight incline, sharp curve. He turned, it flipped, threw him out, and then came down on top of me. This, incidentally, in my experience with the Wage and Hour Division, has been the second death involving forklifts in the last 5 years. One was down in Eugene, and at that time, the commission took the individual's right to hire minors away from him as well. There have been other instances where the commission has encountered what we believe to be gross violations involving loss of hands, feet, what have you, and not necessarily deaths, but serious injuries. The commission is pretty much stymied in its effort to get some meaningful enforcement, primarily because their only remedy is to, one, revoke the right to hire minor of that particular employer, two, to file a complaint with the district attorney. It is a misdemeanor to violate that particular statute. Our experience with filing these actions with district attorneys throughout the state has not really been very encouraging. We attempted to do so in Jackson County and in Josephine County at certain points, involving a minor who fell off a roof and broke his back. We got nowhere. So we believe that although there is a remedy as a misdemeanor through the district court, the opportunity for enforcement really rests with the agency. And we believe that we could get more effective enforcement if we did have the ability to assess a penalty.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Hanna.
If that person that fell off the roof and injured their back, if they'd been 19, that still prevented them from falling off the roof and hurting their back?
No, sir.
You know, this is, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to be perfectly clear in my statement here. This is the kind of legislation that really upsets me. We talk about unemployment of our youth, and we have legislation in this state that restricts and prohibits anyone from gainful employment. But on the other hand, we tell people if you go out and get on welfare and you become a burden to government, we'll take care of you. And here you're coming in with more and more legislation of this order to prohibit people from being a gainful part of our employment and society in this state. And I don't know. This, I assume on this bill, and I haven't found it yet, but apparently there is an age 18 that we're talking about, that anyone under the age of 18 would be prohibited from employment unless they received a permit. And, Mr. Chairman, I'm really concerned about this because there are a lot of young people in this state, if they had a ability, they would go out and seek employment if they could find a job, and here we are putting up more roadblocks. And I think we need to look at this very seriously. Child labor laws is one thing, but I think there's a heck of a lot of teenagers that are being denied the opportunity to work in this state because of our foolishness that we have here.
Mr. Hugo, if I understood you correctly, the penalty is the ability to fine, or the authority to impose a $1,000 fine is directed toward the individual who does not secure the permission of the Commissioner of Labor or the Wage and Hour Division to hire that minor. Is that correct?
The penalty is levied for a violation of the child labor law.
Okay,
what you just described is a violation.
Okay, so what we've been talking about is a much broader section. You're running 305 to 360.
That's correct.
Could you enumerate exactly what provisions would come within this as so the committee would understand exactly what it is that if someone violates it, the commissioner or the commission has the authority to impose a civil penalty? You've told us one on obtaining a permit to hire minors. What are some of the others?
The 307, 653-307, deals with the issuance of employment certificates. That is where an employer will send us a certificate indicating that he intends to hire a minor such and such of activity and duty and what have you. We will either validate or deny it, send it back, and so on. 653-310 deals with, again, you can only employ the minor when such certificate has been validated. 315 has to do with hours of employment for minors under 16. There are several exemptions to that. We heard minors employed in agriculture are not subject to that. Minors employed in youth camps are not subject to the hours provision. Minors employed in news carrier or vendors are not subject to it. And minors employed under special permit or minors employed in private residence and domestic work and so on, they do not come under the hours provision. 653-320 deals with the employment of minors under 14. Very restrictive legislation there. But then there is a whole battery and set of rules that deal with that that the commission has set up. Employing vocationally trained minors, that simply indicates that a minor was, that's 653-326, that simply indicates that the kid who has finished school and he's not 18 yet, he can go to work if he's already been trained in something. He doesn't have to wait till his 18th birthday if he's already completed his education. 653335, elevator operators under, have to be over 18. That is dealing primarily with the open elevator, the freight elevator, that type of thing. 653340, the employment of minors as messengers and delivery boys. There's quite a restriction placed on them by statute. 653345 deals with the employment of kids in the fields under 12 years of age. That's 345, 350, 355 all deal with the same. 653360 deals with the boating and commercial fishing situations. This is a copy of the commission's rule on the subject, as a matter of fact, or the rule is a copy of the statute, I should say. And that sets up a mechanism and a procedure by which minors can work on fishing boats and in the commercial fishing industry. Now, there's also a whole set of rules the commission has with regard to hazardous occupations.
You know, I've been trying to figure out why Mr. Schallenberg from the Farm Bureau has been here wanting to testify on his bill, and you just told me, and I now see it. But the other question I have is that I've been reading, looking at the statute, and I'm trying to figure out whether, in fact, what you're proposing is not already covered in 654, which is the safety and health conditions in places of employment generally. And the reason I say that is because the definition of employee in that section, which covers them, says employee means any individual, including a minor, whether lawfully or unlawfully employed, and then goes on to define it, and whether, in fact, if we're not, and then it sets out a series of affirmative obligations on the part of employers to furnish a safe place of employment, unsafe or unhealthy place of employment prohibited, interference with safety devices, duty to comply with safety and health orders, decisions and rules, and it just sets out a whole scheme as it deals with the workplace. And I'm just wondering if, in fact, that we're not being doing the same thing again.
In the particular,
they do have civil penalties in that provision.
That's correct. And in this particular case that we were discussing earlier about the kid who was killed on a forklift, the Accident Prevention Division did make an investigation and did cite the company for failure to instruct their employees on the use of the forklift and the safety devices and what have you. I think they assessed $700 for that. And then they have what they call an administrator's discretion or something like that. And they assessed a $300 penalty for the allowing a minor under 18 years of age to operate the thing. That is correct.
And this, if this bill passed, this would give the labor commissioner an authority to impose another $1,000 fine.
That's in addition to what
this OSHA,
yes,
basically did.
Yes.
I hope the committee members see that, because I think it's a policy decision that the committee's going to have to make, because most of what has been stated, except as I think that the representative of the Farm Bureau is going to be pointing out to us, is covered by the Occupational Safety and Health Act, and it provides civil penalties. And George, it was just stated that the incident that was talked about the child, the young...
That should have been covered by OSHA.
It was, and they imposed a $1,000 fine against the employer for two separate violations. Okay. Is there any other questions? Thank you very much. Don, is it Schellenberg? Don, come on up.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Don Schellenberg, Manager of Public Affairs for the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. I am testifying in opposition to Senate Bill 212. I would like to depart from my text to apologize for this testimony being very general, in that I'm not entirely aware of how things work around here. I'm fairly new, and only yesterday did I realize this was going to be heard today, but I felt it important that I make some type of comment. And it's a general a general statement. Farm Bureau policy states that there is a social need to develop a sense of economic responsibility among youth. It is equally important that youth have beneficial means of utilizing their time. We support means to maintain and increase young people's opportunity for employment. Such employment opportunities should be in productive enterprises such as agricultural, forestry, or skilled apprenticeship programs. This bill, and I'm referring particularly to Section 3, indicates that neither parents or employers have any common sense when it comes to hiring and placing minors in the labor force. Whether or not a job is hazardous can best be determined by the employer, who is, after all, experienced at the job. Section 3 of this measure strikes at the very core of democracy and American freedom. At any time the state can supersede the parents in dictating the activities of their minor children, we have taken one giant step toward communism. Mr. Chairman, it's not my intent or purpose to come here to be an alarmist by making that kind of statement, but when you come right down to the base of it and the bottom line, that's in fact what it would amount to if you were to carry that clear on down the line. Oregon Farm Bureau policy declares we believe in the American family, in self-government, in limitations upon governmental power, and in maintenance of equal opportunity. All four of these statements call for defeat of this bill. We urge your opposition to Senate Bill 212. Thank you.
Are there any questions?
Chairman, only my comment that it's not always the parents don't always know best as far as safety is concerned, and that's why OSHA inspects also farm operations. There's been an ever-increasing number of accidents on the farm in the past, and OSHA, not only does OSHA do it, the insurers, like Safe, you're insured with Safe or whatever, and the carrier, work with farmers trying to see that their employees, farm workers, are working more safely under safe conditions. So I disagree with you. The parent always knows best. I mean, as far as...
Granted, there are exceptions. Granted.
Are there any further questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that cares to testify on Senate Bill 212?
Mr. Chairman, I might say that I appointed Carl Fetters to a chaplain of the committee when I was chairman here, and I thought perhaps he'd have a good scripture, or at least quote a good scripture for the occasion today.
He did.
And did he?
Listen, you missed it.
Oh, great. All right.
Is there anything else to come before the committee? Hearing none, we're adjourned. Before we go, I want everyone to understand that it is not my intention ever, and I've said this on the other committees that I chair, the other committee, that I do not like the process personally of having hearing on a bill and then sending it out the same day. I like everybody to look at it, and then it'll come back up at a work session. We'll all see it, and we'll take action on it at that time.
It's like a fine wine. It needs-